First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
The battle over redistricting continues with another ruling imminent. Duval School says it will keep dozens of books focused on diversity out of classrooms. And the Jags try for a playoff spot, this one in a primetime home game. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. It's 549-2937. You can also watch the live video stream up now at Facebook and YouTube. Then later, January's DJ Sessions inside JME. That's our own Jacksonville music experience. That's later. But first this hour, it's Friday, our first Friday roundtable of the new year here in studio. Claire Goforth of The Daily Dot. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And zooming in, blogger and regular contributor Fred Matthews. Hey, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics and our own Jax Today. Hey, A.G.
Good morning. Hey, good morning and happy new year.
You as well. And rounding out our fabulous foursome, Ben Becker of, oh, actually, we do not have Ben Becker of Action News Jax. We hopefully will have him in a moment. But everyone, the number to join us is 549-2937. Let's begin with our top story. The Jacksonville city elections are just a few months away, coming up near the end of March. And as the new year begins, things are still really in flux when it comes to the state's political lines of power. This whole situation is a little complicated, but it could go right up to the brink of candidate qualifying, which starts next week. So what's going on with all of this? There's a lot to get into. Let's begin with Claire Goforth here in studio. Claire, can you make this as simple as possible for people listening that haven't been paying close attention? And the number to join us is 549-2937.
So after the city council drew district maps, the NAACP and a coalition of groups that includes the Northside Coalition challenged those maps on the grounds that they unconstitutionally packed Black voters into too few districts. The court in the end, they overturned the maps after they had gone back to the city council, redrew them. And what has happened now is that the map that the plaintiffs drew is going to be the map currently that is to be used unless the city's challenge to the court's ruling is successful. And what recently has occurred is that the court has allowed the city council to temporarily overturn the residency requirement so that people who are running for office this upcoming cycle will, as long as they live in the district in which they're running as of next week, the qualifying period, then they will be allowed to run rather than having to live in that district for 6 months.
In other words, I believe the technical term, A.G. Gankarski, is hot mess. Is that right?
Yeah. This is a mess. It's going to the deadline. We're still waiting in the appeals court decision that, at least in theory, could reimpose the city map, the second one that they passed. But this is a really bad look, and this is really operationally tough for, the supervisor of elections office that's got qualifying next week. It's tough for candidates, but ultimately, it's the greatest disservice to voters. I mean, there are candidates jumping around from district to district, people registering outside their district. It's for those who believe that the point of city government is to connect people and neighborhoods to the larger city, the consolidated model. This is a travesty and a sham. Mm. And the fact that they're having to wait this long to figure out who their candidates might be, it's the icing on the cake.
549-2937. Fred Matthews, you've been covering local politics for a long time. Have you ever seen anything like this when it comes to city council and local elections?
Not this confusing and not so selfishly done as it publicly appears to have been done this time. I mean, when we're doing reapportionment and all of that, and that council districts automatically have to be realigned, it's one of the few times that for politicians, they get to be a bit selfish. They draw the lines. You're gonna always try to draw the lines to your benefit, especially if you're the incumbent and you're gonna be in. If you're outgoing, you could care less how the lines are drawn. But in this case, we've got a lot of confusion with it. We've got a lot of self-serving business going on here. And you know, here we have the city council arguing, fighting in court with community organizations about, you know, where, about how the line should be drawn and what they should be. And again, as will be evident here, the problem we have is that voters won't know what district they're going to be in. It's going to be the supervisor elections, as has been mentioned, has got to not only look at polling places, they've got to get the information out to us as to where we're going to vote, because we just changed a lot of polling places. Now voters have got to figure out where they're going to be voting at again. That's a possible change there, which is going to cause a lot of confusion.
Absolutely. Let me put this challenge out to everyone listening. I'm going to challenge you to call in with this. Here's my question to you. Do you know who your city council person is? Do you know what city council district you live in Duval County? Chances are a lot of you don't even know that. And now everything is in flux. So this is only creating more confusion for voters that do want to cast a ballot in March. Give us a call. Let us know. Do you know who your city council person is? Do you know if you're going to vote for them in March? Is this all news to you? We want to hear from you. 549-2937. Ben Becker, you know, as Fred pointed out, this whole thing began because the federal judge ruled that Jacksonville and the city council unconstitutionally segregated voters on the basis of race. And after the city tried to pass new maps, she ruled again that they had not fixed the problem. She ordered city council to use the maps drawn by the plaintiffs, like the local NAACP and the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, who's headed up by a guy named Ben Frazier, an elderly gentleman dealing with cancer who was arrested when he showed up at city council recently to complain about what he says is ongoing institutional racism in the city. Ben.
There's a really eye-opening dichotomy here. I've spoken to a number of members of city council, and what they've expressed to me is, while the plaintiff's maps are intended to help the African-American voters that where they're packed in right now, they pointed out to me that they believe, their understanding, how they view it, is it actually could hurt African-American representation on city council, because right now there's, in effect, a guaranteed amount of African-Americans on city council by having these new maps. While you could ensure more Democrats on city council, it could actually end up being fewer African-Americans who are representing districts. So, you know, that's something they pointed out to me. Now, whether that's their spin or whatever way you want to look at it, but the fact is, in their view, you could end up with more white Democrats on city council, but not necessarily more African-Americans.
Claire Goforth, what about that?
Well, that certainly is their spin, and they have the right to spin it that way. But in reality, what they're trying to do is protect the Republican majority on city council. I do think that it is relevant to note that Jacksonville has a long, tortured history with race relations, but we're living in a city that's roughly half and half Republican and Democrat, and yet we have a supermajority of Republicans on city council. And part of the reason for that is really what is at the root of this particular issue, is that African-American voters who tend to vote Democratic have been lumped into very tight districts, and that has diluted the voting power of Democrats in the city of Jacksonville. So really, while it is very important to note that the very real issue of putting Black voters into these very compact districts, very tight, small districts, in order to preserve having a voice, it's also in a way diluting their vote, because by spreading them into more districts, they have more of a chance of having a greater voice on city council.
A.G. Gankarski, all 19 city council seats will be up for election on March 21st. We'll also have the first mayoral election, which is likely to go to a runoff. Five council incumbents have not even been challenged so far. The council seems to be operating with, critics say anyway, a sort of brazenness, this sense that even the smackdowns from the federal judge, that they can somehow evade the accountability of the federal courts and the angry voters.
Yeah, and that was in evidence during the entire process. I mean, they passed two maps, and both times their general counsel assured them that they were on the right side of legality, that these maps are legally defensible, and so on. That clearly wasn't the case, at least on the lower court level. We'll see what the appeals court does. But, you know, the council did not really solicit input from citizens, did not take criticism seriously, basically undercut maps, alternative maps that are proposed, and so on. And, you know, they basically went on the 2011 lines, trying to retrofit them to the current era, which didn't exactly work. And that's kind of the problem that the council created. I think if the council had more of a good faith posture, they might have at least gotten their second map through. But the process revealed a lack of good faith. And that's the problem. And we've seen this throughout city government, you know, from initiatives like, you know, obviously trying to sell JEA. That was one, the privatization initiative. But, you know, we see it through council. I mean, council has done this over and over again with things like, you know, trying to basically quell public participation. How many times in recent years have they cleared the chambers because somebody said something they didn't like in a mic? And the people who always inspire a clearing of chambers, it seems to be people on the left, not on the right. So the city council basically dug its own grave with this, and now they're waiting to see if the appeals court will save. But the fact that it's been pushed to this 11th hour crisis, that speaks volumes about the collapse of democracy in the city.
The collapse of democracy in this city. Fred.
Well, I think that's part of the changing of the guard demographically in our city. It's obviously, again, if you just look at where we are, in 15 years ago, 20 years ago, we would not have an African-American elected to the city council in Arlington, what was, I assume it's still gonna be Arlington District 1. But we're gonna have, it appears, if things go as they're going right now, that we're gonna have a Democrat. We've had a Democrat representing that district, and next we could probably have a Republican again representing that district, and both of them will be African-American. And that's kind of outside of the 7, 8, 9, and 10 districts that have traditionally been African-American, and then you look to get one African-American elected at large. But even that has been turned on its head, because now we have two African-American men elected at large on the city council. That means everybody in the city has voted for them. The arguments are fairly valid that the NAACP and the Northside Coalition want about it. They'd like to have folks to be able to vote for who they want and not have all of them compacted into these four districts. But the reality of it is that that's relatively difficult. It's not going to change necessarily how many African Americans are on the city council. It's not going to change how many women get elected to the city council, and it's not going to change how many Republicans get elected to the city council. The biggest issue here for us right at this point is, who are we voting for? Where are we voting? And what district are we voting in? Mm. That's what we're stuck with. That's what the voters are faced with right now, because the rest of this stuff is just a pure changing of the guard here in Duval County, Jacksonville.
Let's go to your calls. Do you know who your city council person is? That's one question, everybody. Are you going to vote in March in the city council and mayor's races? Are you confused by all this? 549-2937, lots of calls. Parrish in District 14. Parrish, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First time calling up here. I'm a little bit nervous, but I've been following this for 4 months, and I'm running for city council as an independent right now. I'm registered under District 14. So, you know, just my strategy has been knocking doors, and since they've been throwing us around, you know, I've been a little bit confused as to what areas to knock. So, yeah, it's been frustrating, but I am, you know, currently my appointment's on the 11th to switch over to District 7, and which moves us into downtown Riverside area. And, you know, I'm a fan of the new map. It does kind of make District 7 the most hot and sought after district in the city, if you ask me, because it combines Jacksonville's, you know, coolest neighborhoods all into one.
Hmm. Okay. Well, good luck with your campaign. What's your last name? Take a minute to, yep. Let folks know who you are.
My last name is King. So it's Parrish King. I have a website. It's parrishking.com. You know, it's always been my dream to run for city council. I know it's hard to win as an independent, but I am trying my best. So I look forward to continuing to work in the city.
Thank you for that, Parrish. Ben Becker, you know, people can go to DuvalElections.com to learn more, although that website's probably going to be seeing some changes in the next weeks. You can also go to JaxToday.org. We'll have updated information there and at WJCTNews.org. But as you heard from that candidate, he's trying to campaign in a really volatile, confusing environment.
Well, it's a mess. You know, this is uncharted territory, and I think we've gone over this this morning so far. We really don't know what direction the ship's going to sail. And I'm sure the supervisor of elections, Mike Hogan, is pulling his hair out, what's left of it right now, trying to figure out how this thing's going to progress. I just find it incredibly interesting that a federal judge said the Jacksonville Charter is inconsequential in this situation. I mean, that's the constitution of the city, and it's being thrown aside in this whole matter with nine council people or districts that anyone can run. You know, I can move there tomorrow and run. It sets to me an incredibly terrible precedent. Because now what happens in the future? Another judge will decide a part of the Jacksonville City Charter isn't applicable for something, will be ignored, or, okay, for now, we won't abide by it, but we will in the future. So we've just entered a whole slippery slope, and who knows where it's going to end.
Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mark. All right, Brad at the beaches. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Melissa, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I feel like the Jacks Beach City Council race this past election was kind of the canary in the coal mine. We all three seats were turned over without one citizen vote. So we have two incumbent city councilors that were reappointed and another person that ran unopposed. So, how can we even go before the council and say, hey, if you don't do the wishes of the people, we're going to vote against you, when no one's even running against them to provide opposition? But that I also feel like, is it I'm not sure my district, but Councilman Diamond is our representative for the beaches. Is he one of the five incumbents running unopposed?
You know, as you asked that question, I'm looking. Yes, it looks like he is running unopposed in District 13. So thank you for that call, Brad. Claire.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say that we're going to hold you to account when we don't even get a chance to vote in your election. We've seen a lot of this in local politics and larger, you know, statewide politics as well, where districts are drawn in such a way that in most people's minds, it's essentially impossible to overcome the majority of whatever party has that district. But one of the problems with that is that it represses voter turnout. And it leaves people feeling like they are disenfranchised and they don't have a voice if they're not of the party who has the control of that particular district.
Richard is downtown. Hey, Richard, thanks for holding.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, to answer the question, yes, I know what district I'm in, number 7, for now. And then it just changed to number 8.
Right.
For now. But one of the things that I really want to mention is, number one, is I'm no party affiliated. The King is his name, who's running in District 7, said he's running as independent. Chances are he's not a member of the independent party. Most people are confusing independent and NPA. NPA means no party affiliation. So, my point is this: The reason why so many people don't know anything about voting is because the supervisor of elections is literally sitting on his behind just waiting for everybody to come and cast a vote, rather than being out in the community every day educating voters. And I think that if the supervisor of elections did his job better to actually educate the voters on days that we don't vote, I think we'd have a well-educated constituency that's voting for people. The other thing is, I want to say, the one good thing that's coming out of this is that young man said he's running in District 7. For the first time, we may be off the rails of getting another Gaffney, because if Gaffney Jr. wins and wins twice, that means we've got 24 years of Gaffneys in Duval County. And that concerns me more than a Republican or Democrat, because we have the potential to build where families are running on their names alone, and that doesn't serve us well at all.
Well, I'll tell you, Richard, when it comes to Mike Hogan, the supervisor of elections, he has always been quite willing to appear on this program to try to educate the voters about what's going on, and we're certainly going to extend that invitation to him before March 21st. And if you're just tuning in, lots of calls still waiting on this, but there's lots of news, folks, so we're going to move on. It's our Friday roundtable with Claire Goforth, Fred Matthews, A.G. Gankarski, and Ben Becker. The number to join us, 549-2937. All right, let's talk about another big story from the week. Duval County Schools says it's going to keep dozens of books focused on diversity and inclusion out of classrooms. Now, among the rejected titles are a book about Martin Luther King Jr., intended for fourth graders, a biography of Rosa Parks for second grade classrooms, a first grade Berenstain Bears book about God, and multiple titles that feature LGBTQ plus characters and families. District staffers are sending the rejected books back to the distributor for exchange. Now, this all comes after the Florida legislature passed limits on what teachers in Florida can say about race, gender, and sexual orientation in class, and they set new rules for purchasing classroom materials. Let us know your thoughts about this. It's 549-2937. A.G. Gankarski, the National Literary Organization Pen America, which advocates for free speech, has roundly criticized these types of what amount to book bans in Florida. Representative Sam Garrison from our area in Fleming Island was a sponsor, actually, of one of the bills that requires school districts to maintain a list of library materials and makes it easier for the public to contest school books. AG.
Yeah, I mean, elections have consequences, and we're seeing the consequences of recent elections in the state. The governor's made no bones about the fact that he wants public education not to include LGBT and African-American perspectives that he has asserted fall under the aegis of CRT, critical race theory. And we're seeing this on the local level with the purging of these books. You know, the books are still commercially available, obviously. They're just not going to be available in these schools. So it's not a hard book ban. It's a ban for the schools. But that being said, this is what people voted for. They voted for it in the school board races. They voted for it in the governor's race. You know, the legislative races are obviously gerrymandered to where there's no real selection beyond the primary. But, you know, this is Ron DeSantis, Florida, coming to action. You didn't see this stuff under Rick Scott, Charlie Crist, Jeb Bush. It took Ron DeSantis manufacturing consent to get here. And we're going to see more of this because there's no oppositional force capable of resisting it in the near future. So this is the first of many book purges we're going to see in this area, I would bet.
Fred Matthews, the governor, was inaugurated this week for a second term. In his speech, he talked about Florida as a place where he says woke goes to die. He also called Florida a citadel for freedom. However, critics of these kinds of moves say the governor's policies are muzzling and marginalizing vulnerable groups of people, in particular LGBTQ people. Fred.
Well, the best part about this is that we only have to tolerate it for 3.5 more years. And then we'll get somebody else in that is not running for president And that's what.
Well,
this
maybe
is all about.
You never know.
Well, I mean, this is every politician, especially those who are aspiring to higher office. You have to have a hook. And this has been a woke ideology has been a good hook for the governor. It's been a good hook for those. I won't really call them conservative, but we'll call them those on the far right who want any excuse to down folks who they deem as other. And this has been a good hook for him. And many folks have gotten elected or selected to city to school boards across the state based upon this same kind of ideology, and forcing a lot of superintendents, even ours, to take a look over their shoulder and go along with this ban the books kind of ideology that, you know, I thought we would not do here in the United States. That we don't do this. Not since Kristallnacht have we had books banned. I guess if they had their way, they'd take them out and burn them at midnight. But that's where we are. And as AG indicated, and we've said this before, you get the government you voted for. And this is the guy. He won overwhelmingly with this. He's going to continue to do it for the next 3.5 years. We just all have to suffer. Those in school have to suffer through it. But thankfully, you can go to any bookstore and get what you want and educate your kids that way if need be.
We're getting lots of tweets about this, expressing all views across the spectrum. Just one from Mike: kids need to have access to these diverse books. And of course, not everyone agrees with that. But Ben Becker, what about this, you know, taking a book away from fourth graders that educated them about Martin Luther King Jr.? Now, I don't know what's in the book, but that, I think that one, and also the biography of Rosa Parks that was removed. Those
yes,
kinds
certainly.
Of moves are extreme. That's an extreme move to take a book about Rosa Parks out of a school library or Martin Luther King Jr.
They raise red flags, absolutely. And, you know, I'm a sports fan, and these books weren't banned yet, but they're put on hold or they're pending. There's one book about Roberto Clemente, who is a Hall of Fame baseball player and one of the great humanitarians of the sport. And another is about Hank Aaron, who's one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and, by the way, played minor league ball in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And there's books about them who right now are being reviewed. Now, I don't know what would necessarily be controversial about their stories. There's never been any indication there's been anything controversial about them in any, you know, way, shape, or form. But it goes to show you right now, there's really no way to kind of gauge where this is going or what the guardrails are and what's the decisions that are being made here and what this could mean going forward.
Let us know your thoughts. 549-2937. Claire Goforth, I think the reason this has caused so much conversation is because history tells you what happens when you start banning books. There's a long historical record that we can look at.
Right. We control the access to knowledge. People don't have it, and they are operating on a limited amount of information when they make decisions. You know, the things that about this particular issue that strike me is that 45% of students in Duval County schools are Black. And many of these books are, you know, the tale of people who overcome diversity and challenges, including segregation and other issues such as those Hank Aaron faced in order to become successful and to break, you know, break molds and be trailblazers in their particular fields. And those are uplifting stories that young children of color should have access to. I mean, we have a white governor basically saying that we shouldn't be teaching kids about the very inspiring stories of Black heroes of the past because it might cause some white kids guilt or anguish. Does that feel right to us as voters? But then again, we did vote for Governor DeSantis overwhelmingly and for the Republican legislature. And I will say, to Fred's point, I don't know that we'll have to put up with it for 3.5 years, because it would probably be more like 1.5 years, given DeSantis' very obvious presidential ambitions.
We're getting tweets about it appears to be a play that's in rehearsal at Douglas Anderson High School. It has apparently been canceled by the school because it deals with LGBT themes. We do need to confirm that, though. A.G. Gankarski, your thoughts about all of this?
Well, I think that you're going to see repercussions from this for years to come. I mean, everybody's saying at 3.5 years, DeSantis will be out, it'll be a new reality. Not so fast, my friends. When you look at the people looking to run for governor, you've got somebody like Representative Byron Donalds, who obviously has made a name for himself this week in the House Speaker race. You've got somebody like Matt Gaetz, the congressman from the Panhandle, who's also looking at it. You're going to see a race to the right in this governor's race. If DeSantis does leave office early, I don't expect Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez to deviate from him, from his educational policy. So this is a shape of things to come, not just for DeSantis era, but for some years beyond. 2030 and the new census and potential redistricting after that may change things, but Republican power is so entrenched in Tallahassee, and Tallahassee is so top down now in terms of directives for counties like Duval that might otherwise go in another direction, that there's very little maneuvering possible on the local level.
It's 549-2937. Let's talk about what's going on in Washington for a minute that AG mentioned, Ben. Our Florida representatives have been getting a bit of airtime as 11 votes have failed to secure a Speaker of the House in Washington. They adjourned last night after an 11th vote. Kevin McCarthy, unable to become Speaker. Florida Rep. Byron Donalds got, I think, about a dozen votes in one of the rounds. We've seen Representative Kat Kamick on cable news, Representative Matt Gaetz. Here's a tweet from Jacksonville Congressman John Rutherford. He says, thanks to Representative Matt Gaetz, Representative Donalds, and Representative Paulina, mentioning three of his colleagues in the Congress, congressional offices like mine aren't able to help our constituents with casework requests while we wait to be sworn in. The small minority obstructing the speaker election is causing real consequences for Americans. That's from John Rutherford, Ben.
Well, that's, take it for what it's worth. But McCarthy's 0 for 11 right now. And Melissa, I heard if he loses one more vote, he may get the number one draft pick in the upcoming NFL draft.
Oh!
I just heard that's what I'm hearing.
That's what you're hearing.
What might happen.
You've heard things.
Okay,
you know, unconfirmed. Right.
That's unconfirmed.
I have sources.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
It's a bad look for everybody, right? I mean, this thing's continuing. They can't get to the business of the people. You can't move forward until you have a Speaker of the House. I would imagine at some point they're going to come to some sort of compromise on this. They're going to have to. I think the heels are dug in to make him the speaker. I think about the 20 or so Republicans are holding out. They'll placate them somehow at some point. But this isn't a good way to start off the session for 2023. And hopefully it's not a sign of things to come.
549-2937. Sharon in Mandarin. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I feel like all of these steps that are being taken by the far right, not just here in Florida, but also obviously, are the same steps that were taken towards fascism. And I'm just wondering when people are going to start calling it that instead of tiptoeing around it. I mean, how far are we going to get into fascism before we start calling it that? Because that is exactly what book burning is. And then
no one's burned any books yet, but go ahead.
Well, we're not. We don't know what they're doing with the books. And frankly, I think that's the agenda. And I think it's an obvious agenda. And I just don't know why the people of the country are not calling it what it is. like there's some fear of saying the word fascism because you're calling someone a fascist. But if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it's a duck. And that's my caution.
Thank you, Sharon. Earlier in the show, I think it was AG that mentioned we're basically seeing the collapse of a democratic process in the city of Jacksonville. Have we seen that in Florida? Is Florida fascist? Claire?
It is not, but there are certainly very loud voices who want Florida to be fascist, openly so, people who live locally. I have seen it myself. I cover the far right extensively, and they are a growing voice, a growing contingent, and the representatives who are currently holding the Republican attempt to nominate a speaker hostage are members of the far right. They are far right representatives. And while they may not openly advocate for fascism, there are certainly elements to it. Many of them 2 years ago today were among the chorus of voices who were trying to overturn the results of a free and fair election. And that is the very definition of fascism.
I know that this is a topic that we could continue to talk about all day and all year, and we'll continue to touch back on it, of course. But before we say goodbye to our fabulous foursome, we want to lighten things up just a little bit and let you know that it's Happy Teal Day. That's right. Mayor Lenny Curry is encouraging everyone to cheer on the Jaguars and wear teal today. The Jaguars are taking on the Tennessee Titans tomorrow here at home in hopes of clinching the AFC South title and a trip to the NFL playoffs. Game time is 8:15 p.m. Wear your teal today. At the same time, let me go to AG for a comment. Here's an email from Anna AG. She says, could I suggest that the city might benefit by making the skies above the stadium a no-fly zone? I anticipate racist banners will be flown again. AG.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. It will be a night game, so the visual would be a bit different, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the Save Southern Heritage people bring out the Confederate banner behind a biplane yet again, as they've done at other games this year. This will obviously be the most high-profile game of the Jaguar season up to the state. So the city could do that. Since we're talking about the Jaguars, I mean, it's interesting that we're seeing a push for renewed stadium investment as they're having this winning streak right now. Before the city invests hundreds of millions of dollars into a stadium project, I mean, just consider how streaky NFL teams are. Right now, the Jaguars look great, but I mean, you can look at stadiums across the country, and when the teams lose two or three games in a row, road fans take over the stadium. So be cautious. Don't buy into the hype of this playoff run that it looks like is going to happen. Separate that if you can from the big ask for stadium money is going to come very soon.
Let's talk about that too. Fred Matthews, the Jaguars have announced the completion of one more step in what they call the stadium of the future.
Well, I call that area down there Conland, be honest with you, because that's what it all is. I mean, when you you take that ride from the Arlington Expressway into downtown and back, you can now see the new practice facility is really coming up quite fast, quite quickly there along that area. That'll be the place for you to go. That's nice because you can go and watch them practice and you don't have to sit in the rain and the wind for those who go see that sort of thing. When you're winning, it's easier to advocate for the things that you really want, which is, they improve the stadium or even get a new stadium, put a dome on it. Why not? Well, you know, like everybody else, these are going to come, but I don't think we're going to see it happen anytime soon. It's good to have the home team winning. My team is in Texas, but it's good to have the home team winning. And it's good to have, Derrick Henry in town also, because I had hoped that he would have been drafted by the Jaguars, but he hadn't, but he's done well. So it's good to have a good home game with our home team, see Derrick Henry live for all the folks up in Yulee and that sort of thing. It's going to be a great game for those who like to watch the game and be there for it. So we can cheer for them this time, but not so much for a new stadium.
Okay. Ben Becker, you know, your station, I think, will be carrying the game over at CBS. Let's talk a little bit about the fans and how excited they are.
Actually, the game will be ESPN.
ESPN, thank you. Okay.
Right. But we are the official station of the Jacksonville Jaguars, just so you know.
I might have heard you say that once or twice on your station.
Once or twice. Right. You also can download the Action News Jax mobile app for more information. But I digress. There's a lot of excitement for this. It is interesting that the stadium news has dropped about the same time as a playoff run is happening. I've talked to a number of economists over the years, and they talk about what kind of impact these stadiums can have on a community. And you always hear the word economic impact is put out there by teams and politicians and stuff like that. But the one thing that you don't hear about often is that economic impact isn't revenue. Economic impact is money that's spent in the community related to games and stadiums, but it doesn't necessarily mean revenue generated from taxes, things like that. So it's like the economic impact is, I could take my family to a game, but that just means that that's money that's not being spent in other parts of the local economy. So it's not necessarily generating new spending, right? And you'll hear about heads in beds and hotel stays and things like that. Well, that generates tax revenue, yes, but the majority of that money that's spent goes back to the corporations that own the hotels. So keep your eyes and ears open when these certain buzzwords and things come up in the next few months discussing the new stadium and what it means for taxpayers. Because at the end of the day, this could be $1 billion spend where taxpayers are going to have to pick up maybe $500 million of it.
Well, in the meantime, for those that are watching on video, Claire Goforth, you are all decked out in your Jaguar teal. You've even got on, it looks like, teal nail polish.
You know, and earrings. And
teal earrings.
And gloves.
You're a super
sunglasses.
Fan.
Sunglasses.
Going to be there? You're going to be at the game?
I will be at the game tomorrow. I'm very excited. I even came up with a new little catchphrase for tomorrow's game. I don't know if y'all remember the Music City Miracle from the 1999 season when the Tennessee Titans dashed the Jacksonville Jaguars. Playoff hopes for the championship by beating us 3 times in one season. It was the only... Those were our only losses that year, became known as the Music City Miracle. Well, I say that tomorrow it's time for the River City Revenge.
Oh, there you go. Nice. Okay. With all of that said, let's go around the horn and talk about stories that might have missed your attention this week. Yes, it's our lightning round, everybody. And I'll start today, January 6th, is the second anniversary of the insurrection and Capitol riot in Washington. Florida has the highest number of people arrested and prosecuted and charged in connection with that riot. And those cases are ongoing. Claire.
Lakeisha Burton has filed to potentially go for another bid for Jacksonville Sheriff. She has not made up her mind yet, but we may see a contested sheriff's race.
Once again. A.G. Gankarski, what's on your mind today?
Well, Burton was on my mind, but I'll go with my backup. Looking at Jerry Hall and Jim Overton, they look slated to be elected to constitutional offices without opposition this election cycle if nobody qualifies before the end of next week. So you're going to see a lot of contested elections on the ballot, but two big ones may not see any competition at all.
Fred Matthews, what's rocking your world?
Well, I'm just... looking out over the year, and we, and quite frankly, the topics that we've talked about so far have really kind of piqued my interest. But one of the things that the young man mentioned about District 7 is that is the No More Gaffneys signs that did pop up during the last city council race, and it will be interesting to see if the younger Gaffney, who is running for what was his father's seat on the east side, is going to be able to pull it off and extend that. But you know, we must remember we also have the Carluccis, which are extending their term in council. Matt is a second generation Carlucci. His father Joe ran, and now Matt's son is running for city council. So this is not an unusual time for family heritages to be done. So it'll be interesting to see if another Gaffney maintains a seat on the city council.
We'll see. Ben Becker, let's end with you.
Well, I want to watch the Jags game Saturday night, but my wife wants to go out on a date, so I got a problem.
Take her to the game.
Your date is not the game, then, I assume.
I have to defer to the boss.
That's a smart man. By the way, I think our stadium, our parking lot tailgating spots, I should say, are almost sold out here at WJCT Studios. For the game Saturday night, we do rent them out to loyal Jaguars fans every football season, and they come and tailgate in our parking lot and hang out and have a great time. I think we might have just a few left on the grass. No more prepaid, just grass the day of. So if you want to tailgate and you don't mind doing it on the grass, you can always contact us here at WJCT. Maybe you'll see Claire.
You might.
Which would be good because she's always a lot of fun. She's been a season ticket holder, I think, from the very beginning. So Claire Goforth, A.G. Gankarski, Fred Matthews, and Ben Becker. Everyone, thank you for being with us, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Coming up, JME, our Jacksonville Music Experience. We'll listen to what our own Matt Shaw is spinning, and it comes and goes with local artists first. That's next. Don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember one of the creators of the Philly sound, songwriter, arranger, and producer Tom Bell. He died last month at the age of 79. Bell wrote the stylistics hits You Are Everything and Betcha By Golly Wow. For the Spinners, he co-composed I'll Be Around. And for the Delphonics, he co-wrote La La Means I Love You. Join us.
Tomorrow at 1 on WJCT News 89.9. With a line that
wasn't true. Evacuation orders are in place as California deals with another major storm. The country's biggest pharmacies can now offer abortion pills and...
Madam Clerk, I rise to nominate Hakeem Jeffries as Speaker of the House.
Kevin McCarthy for Speaker of the House.
Byron Donalds for Speaker of the House of Representatives.
The Never Kevins trigger days of chaos in the Capitol. More on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, 2022 was a big year for our Jacksonville Music Experience. That's WJCT's music platform. It covers all the latest music news from artists near and far. From the launch of our interactive local live music calendar, that's at jacksmusic.org, to the start of our music discovery station, The Independent, at 89.9 HD4, we've been documenting the music scene around town all through the year. And the national spotlight shined brighter than ever as JME debuted its NPR Live Sessions page. That makes us here at 89.9 just one of a couple of dozen stations around the country contributing live musical performances to NPR Music. You can watch those videos and take a listen, too. So what's spinning on our turntables as we kick off the new year? Our arts and culture editor, Matt Shaw, is here in studio to give us a listen. Good morning.
Morning, Melissa. Yeah, just to reiterate what you said, I think it's been a great thrill to put these performance videos together. And, you know, music fans across the country are likely familiar with KXP's live sessions in Seattle or videos from Oral Cafe in Philadelphia from XPN. So to add the JME soundstage in Jacksonville, Florida to that list, it's a great opportunity for our city. And it's not only a platform for local talent, but also a draw for nationally touring artists, which brings me to the first cut I want to play this morning. Early in 2022, we had Luna Luna, an Austin, Texas-based band that makes indie pop, very dancey, fun stuff. What I love about bringing bands into our studio is we always make time for an interview, and we got to talk to Luna Luna about how they went from uploading their music to SoundCloud and really built this audience in a digital space and then hit the road in 2021. We caught up with them on the day of their show at Intuition. Some months later, they did a performance for Austin City Limits, which that video is on NPR Live Sessions too, but we got them first. Here's a taste of Luna Luna playing Commitment live from our soundstage. Oh my world, oh my world, oh you. And when I see it all around, it's true. Oh yeah, I lose more of you. Yeah, and I can see it all be your.
Nice. Now, as you said, they played on our own WJCT soundstage. The video can be viewed, and it has been viewed for a national audience at nprmusic.org.
Yes, nprmusic.org. You just hit the live sessions button, and you can poke around at all the other cities on there. There's 24 cities across the country, but go to the JME Jacksonville page and check out our videos. The next one, this is another out-of-town band. So late in the summer of 2022, Winterland, the organization that puts on the free annual festival here in Jax, they partnered with the Jesse Ball DuPont Center on a free show called Our Music, Our Future, headlined by a handful of Jax-based bands and Acid Dad, a jammy garage rock band from New York City. Think psychedelic-era Grateful Dead meets the Velvet Underground. We captured a video of them performing on the loading docks at the Jesse. A local digital artist named Tachyons Plus created some psychedelic visuals for the backdrop. The video is worth checking out, but here's a taste of the music. Here's Acid Dad Searching live in Jacksonville.
All right, and so that video was shot on the loading docks of the Jesse Ball DuPont Center, is that right?
Yeah, we're got an impromptu crew here, and we're ready to film and record at any time. So anytime there's a good show going on, we really want to give that platform that we've gotten access to artists far and wide.
That was Acid Dad. Okay, last but certainly not least, local artist Ebony Payne English, a First Coast cultural icon. You have a video featuring her.
Yeah, in February, we kicked off a series of local showcases. The first one was at the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jax Beach. The event, as you said, was headlined by Jax poet and musician Ebony Payne English. The video we captured that night was named Song of the Day on NPR Live Sessions a few months after we posted it. It's our most watched video to date, and it almost cracked the top 10 of all the videos produced by NPR Live Sessions stations across the country. So we're really proud of it. Here's Ebony and Serafina Ethereal performing Kwangoza live from Blue Jay Listening Room in Jax Beach.
I'm the greatest. Yeah. And they hate it. I'm the greatest. Yeah. I'm the greatest. Yeah. I'm the greatest. On me. Yeah. And they hate it. When your ego be tripping. Sometimes you shit on the blessings been given. On me. Sometimes you slip on that juice you've been sipping. Yeah. Fall on your face and with grace find repentance.
On me. That's great. Now, as you said, you can check it out at nprmusic.org, but also check out jaxmusic.org and the independent 89.9 HD4.
Yeah, there's a lot of music news, a lot of new music we're adding to rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4. You can go to our site at jaxmusic.org, and if you want to preview these videos, it's a shortcut to get to the NPR Live Sessions page. You just hit watch at the top of the page and go to Jacksonville Music Experience Live Sessions.
That's excellent. And congratulations, Matt, on getting all of this local talent some national exposure.
Oh, it's a thrill. Thank you.
We'll close with Jacksonville Country Boys' Dean Winter and The Heat. They performed recently live here at our WJCT soundstage. Enjoy and have a great weekend. Summer came and blew us all away. Snare drum on this town. And
son, don't you worry about a thing. What is meant to be will be. And lately I've been chasing almost every single dream. I'm starting to think that I was just asleep. Cause summer came and blew us all.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.